and we're here for the interview hour of the Metal Command Show. This week's interview, of course, with former Iron Maiden vocalist Blaze Bailey, who, of course, has his own band entitled Blaze Bailey, and releasing his fifth album since being out of Iron Maiden a little over 10 years ago. So, Blaze, it's great to have you on, and tell us a bit about your new album, Promise and Terror.
Well, it's an album that comes in two halves, and the second half tells a story, and it's linked together lyrically and musically. And it's not something that we set out to do. It is something that happened during the writing process. We came together and had our ideas, and then some ideas came up during the time that we were spent together writing, and those four songs just naturally seemed to fit together. And as time went on and we worked on them more, it was obviously they had to go together, you know. That was our gut instinct, and when we put them together, then they told the story perfectly. So it's not really a concept, it's nothing we've thought up. It really is a story of raw emotion and a personal journey through those emotions to a place where you can feel comfortable with uncertainty and not feel like the world has completely overwhelmed you, which is what happens at the start of the story. And the other songs on the album in the first part are a lot more in the style that you used to from Blaze Bailey Band, and some of it is telling stories about characters and situations that are inspirational and interesting to us. So one song is called The City of Bones, and that's about the Siege of Leningrad in the Second World War. And what happened was Dmitri Shostakovich was working on his Seventh Symphony during the siege, and they were surrounded for 900 days, and he managed to finish his Seventh Symphony and get the remaining musicians that were alive in the city to perform it, and they broadcast that and played it on loudspeakers to the troops who were surrounding the city, and in a show of absolute defiance. And one of the Nazi leaders at the time said, "We knew then, when we heard that we would never take that city." And it's a great story, and it's one that I've wanted to do something about for quite a long time, but on this album a lot of things fell together, and we started one of the ideas, and it just started to come together, and I thought, well, this is maybe where I can fit this Siege of Leningrad idea together, and it worked perfectly. So that one is City of Bones, and then there's another one about perhaps an unknown character called Bert Munro from New Zealand, who broke the world record for a 1,000cc motorcycle, and he came from New Zealand, and he travelled to Bonneville in the USA, and everybody said he was too old, his machine was too old, he was over 65 years of age, and they said it was too dangerous for him, but he absolutely ignored everyone, and he succeeded in breaking the world record, and it was one of the longest standing speed records for a motorcycle. And so that's that song is just a brief snapshot of his story. And I love stories like that where people refuse to give in and people triumph over seemingly impossible circumstances. Mm-hmm. And but a lot of the first part of the album is about that. And musically, I think that what we've done is just ignore what everyone else is doing at the moment and just relied on ourselves, and we've gone, right, does this feel good? Is this appropriate? Does this tell the story? What is the essential identity of the idea? And now we have these fragments together that make sense. Now we have to give up our ego, and now we have to make the idea make sense on its own and take people on a journey, and hopefully when people put their headphones on, then they'll be taken on that journey, and we're not trying to be fashionable or, you know, do anything particularly innovative, but we are absolutely determined to do things in our own style and on our own terms. And so far, you know, fans who have got the Promise and Terror album have really appreciated that. You know, if you like early Maiden and early Metallica, then you'll see a lot of influences from that, as well as Black Sabbath and things like that. But everything in our own style. You know, we're not trying to be like anybody else. We're not trying to be the next big thing in the charts. We're just trying to make the music that we feel we can really put ourselves into and emotionally connect with. And so far, that seems to have worked really well with Promise and Terror. And it's a really direct, raw album. And that's what we wanted. And we never expected it to turn out as well as it did. And it's just great that so many people have started, you know, getting into it.
You know, you just talked about adverse situations and, you know, talking about the first album, or first half of the album anyway, being about that. And you have been through quite a lot of adversity, and that is one of the things that I really admire about you as a person, is that you have persevered through that. And, you know, if you had any advice to give to someone in a band dealing with the same type of thing, or I guess the same type of things, what would it be?
I don't know, really. I'm really lucky. You know, I have a great band, real friends, who've been very supportive. My family have been very supportive. Over the years, then, I've had fans who have stuck by me, even from my first... There are fans from before I was first signed up and before I did my first Wolfsbane album with Rick Rubin, who have stuck by me. So I've had a lot of help along the way. It hasn't really been an accident. I've been going in one direction, but without the help of a lot of fans and a lot of friends and family, then I don't think I would have done it. But the, I suppose, really musically, I've just tried to do what I really love. And I think there's a couple of paths that you can take. And you can try and predict what the next big thing is going to be and fit in and try and make that. Or you can do what you really love and just hope that one day that will come into fashion. And it seems that, you know, over the last few years, people didn't really want guitar solos, and they didn't want, like, these dramatic style vocals and emotional vocals that we do. And now it seems that the world is changing, and people do appreciate big, dramatic arrangements and big subjects and things like this. And people like the fact that we've got guitar solos and melody guitars and harmony guitars. And as well as that, it's, you know, that it's also a passionate and a very urgent sound that we have. So I'd say, you know, try and do something musically that sustains your soul, and learn to count. You know, bookkeeping and numbers are an essential part of staying alive in a band in the modern world. And so if you know someone, or you can teach yourself to be good with numbers and not be scared of numbers, then that's the way the mainstream business has been running for years. You know, the accountants have made the decisions, really, because they've gone, well, these are the numbers and they don't make sense, so you've got to drop that band. Nothing about how good they are musically, but just about sales. And, you know, people with great talents, more talented than me, have been ignored, washed up, and didn't get anywhere. And it's not because their music wasn't incredible or worthwhile or innovative. It's just because it didn't sell at the right time. So I would say, you know, to anybody starting off, try and be good with numbers. Don't be scared of numbers, and, you know, really read your contracts well. And don't be scared to do things on your own. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot, well, for me, it's a way of life. And I think if you look at it as, well, this is a way of life more than this is a career, then I think you've got a better chance of holding on when things don't go so well.
You know, from the musician point of view, and myself being a musician, I have no use for record labels, because to me, all they do is they buy and sell records, and they take a band's money for the most part. And, you know, do you see, you know, do you see more bands becoming independent, you know, say such as yourself?
Well, yeah, I think for me, when I look back, you know, I've been on huge record companies. I was with Geff American, and through them I was on Geffen, I was on Warner's, I was on Phonogram, I've been with EMI, I've been with SPV Steamhammer in Germany. And one thing that has really made me see is that years ago when I left Iron Maiden, I wanted to do things on my own. That was right to think that way, that the power is now coming back to the hands of the artist, that the creativity and hard work can now do a lot. Technology has moved so fast. I did my first album with Wolfsbane at the same place as they recorded, you know, some absolutely classic albums in Los Angeles at Sound City. And since then, I can get the same sound in a box in my home and get exactly the same results as I had, get something that sounds better than my first album, just because, you know, the technology has moved on. And that means that the financial restrictions aren't there for the creative person. It doesn't take much to get yourself going. And I think back years ago, and we would go into the studio and come out with something that we'd think, well, that doesn't, we're not really happy with the way that sounds. And we'd go, well, our own little tiny four-track, we were happier with, like, the guitar sound on that for this sound than we were with the overall sound that we paid all this money for. That's changing now. So, whereas 10 years ago, I would say to people, if I had said to someone, I've got my own record label, my own record deal, they could say, well, that's because you're not good enough to get a proper record deal. Now I say to people, I have my own record label, and they say, when are you going to take other bands on? We'd love to be a part of it. So it's a completely different way. Nobody looks at Blaze Bayley Recordings and go, well, that record won't be as good, that recording won't be as good as anybody else. They go, well, I can't wait to hear that recording. So it's a different world now.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever thought about playing any shows here in the States? I know you have never, you know, gone on a tour here as far as, you know, with Blaze Bayley or with Blaze, but, you know, have you had any offers, and will you play some shows over here in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's totally planned. Our release is in May. I haven't had a proper release yet in the U.S. I mean, with The Man Who Would Not Die, we put the label together and we got the album out as quick as we could. We had a lot of technical problems doing it, and then a terrible tragedy with losing my wife, you know, who was also the manager of the band. But with the Promise and Terror album, then we've managed to get a full U.S. release. We've licensed it to Candlelight, a Promise and Terror album. That will come out in May, and at the moment we're really excited about trying to get to the US sometime after that, and in the summer. So we're really trying to get there. We haven't had a proper release or any support there until now, and we hope that with the help of Candlelight we'll be able to get over there and play some US shows. Because even though I haven't been there for quite a few years, we've had so much support from fans in the USA. And a lot of sales from our shop at blazebailey.net have been fans from the USA. And we always get emails saying, please come over. And we really, really can't wait to come over and try and play a few shows over there. And so we are planning it, and we're really hoping that it works out for us this year. But we're talking to people, and if you keep an eye on blazebailey.net, then as soon as we get anything confirmed, then we'll put it on there. But we're really excited about trying to get over there, and we hope it'll be this year.
Blaze, let's talk about the recording, the actual recording of the album, and, you know, who produced it, and maybe go into some details about, you know, what went behind recording the record.
We started off last album, then we worked with Jace Edwards, the engineer. We had a lot of technical problems, and we took the album to him, and he managed to rescue it for us. And then on this album, we all said, well, you know, we'd really like to work with him as a producer, because I started producing the last album, and then Dave and Nico got involved in it. And really, I wanted to focus a lot more on my own parts, and I wanted that external, objective view that you don't get when you're in the band, because it's somebody from the band's point of view when you're trying to change things or rearrange things. And so we got Jace Edwards in, and he was there, you know, towards the end of the writing process at some of the rehearsals that we had, and of course, you know, he mainly came into play once we started the recording and the drum arrangements. So it worked out really well. But he's the co-producer and the engineer, and we mixed the album with him and everything. And that's worked out well. And the approach that we wanted was very much from a live perspective. We're a live band. We're not really a studio band. You know, most of our creativity goes into the writing process, whereas some bands are more experimental in the studio. For us, the studio is more, well, this is recording and bringing to life our songs. This isn't like where we complete our songs. So what we did was we all moved into my house, and we spent all our time together writing with a small practice drum kit and a little four-track, demoing our ideas and rearranging. And once we thought we had the most of the shape of most of the songs, then we went to our rehearsal room and put everything loud with the full drum kit and everything. And when we heard things like that, then we started rearranging some of the ideas, and some of the ideas were perfect. Mm-hmm. We put them in the order that we thought they may appear on the album, and we rehearsed all the songs as part of a live set, so we could really feel what they would be like live. And then when we went into the studio, we tried to record them in that order as well, and to really give ourselves a sense of what the album was going to feel like overall. And I think that's really paid off, in that it does have a very live feel to it. And so far, as we've been playing the songs live, it's really worked, and fans have really got into it. So that's gone really, really well for us. On this album, we have the artwork from Felipe, who is from Bogota in Colombia again, and I work quite closely with him, telling him each concept for the song. I wanted one illustration per song that really reflected the lyrics and the whole idea of promise and terror and time to dare. And so he came up with the front cover concept, and we worked from there on the characterizations and each illustration for each song. And that's come out really well. And then we've got quite a lot of sleeve notes on there, which I did myself, which when you get the Promise and Terror CD, there's a couple of pages on there that explain to you really in detail what was happening to us when we recorded it, all the circumstances around the album, and how we did it, which is something that we try and stick to, because we feel that as a fan, then we're collectors as well, and we want not just to have the MP3, we want the physical CD with all the artwork in our collection, and we try and make that as worth having as possible. And we try and do, you know, we can do exactly what we want, because we say what artwork we have, because it's our label. We say what music we have on there, so that's what we try and do, and we're really pleased with the way that that's worked out.
Why did you choose to work with that particular artist for the album?
We said to a couple of people, right, here's the idea for the title and the concept that he came up with for the title, Promise and Terror, really fitted. So we went from that, really. And that's what made me decide to go with him.
You know, when you changed the band from Blaze to Blaze Bailey, you have a completely different lineup in the band. And for those people that aren't musicians, you know, how difficult is it to find the right people to play with in a band?
Well, I think it's very difficult. I think the hardest thing is to keep a band together. People grow, people change, people have different expectations, people have differing musical abilities, and it's very difficult to keep a band together doing that. So, I didn't have a full-time band before. I was working with friends and people who were committed to other projects as well as mine. And when my wife started managing the band, then we thought, well, now it's time for a big change. And we changed the name of the band to Blaze Bailey because people just didn't recognise Blaze as the singer from Wolfsbane or Iron Maiden. And if you Google Blaze, you get 100 things, a lot of them porn, that's nothing to do with me or heavy metal. So, well, the first tour that we did, when we changed the name to Blaze Bailey, even though we didn't have an album out, we played to twice as many people as we did when it was Blaze. So that tells you something. And everybody in the band, I said before, you know, as we took people on, I said, right, well, this is why I want to change the name. And everybody agreed that it made sense. We're still a band. We still share all the decisions. You know, everything, everybody has a say in the music and the way that we do things. But we felt that was the name, you know, that would best suit us. And it's really, really worked for us. And then I suppose, you know, moving on from that, when we're looking for musicians, then at this time I didn't kind of say to myself, well, what's going to be the most practical thing? I just went, well, if I could have the best possible person who is available for the job, then that's who I want, and I'll try and get them. And that's it. And I started scouring MySpace for bass players, and I found David Bermudez in Under Threat, and I saw a video of him in Under Threat, and he just looked great, and he sounded great, and then I listened to some of his stuff, and I got in touch with him and started talking about the project and my ideas and, you know, how I wanted things to be, you know, heavy but melodic and with an interesting vocal, interesting lyrics, but still very much, very metal and, you know, not tying ourselves to any kind of particular format with our songwriting. And it all started from there, really. And he suggested his brother, Nico, who I've worked very closely with since then on all of the songwriting, and that's worked out very well. Jay Walsh, I've known for years, who's been in different bands and tried to release his own albums and everything. He's from the UK. And my wife helped me organise drum auditions, and I just had the toughest ever drum auditions, and I had a lot of drummers from all over the world who were interested in being a part of my project, and I just made it very, very difficult. And the guys that came through, there were two guys who were really good enough, and then we chose the guy that we could get along with the best out of that. But it was a very difficult audition, and purposely so, because in our band, you know, the drums really are something we all depend on, and they drive us as much as we are rooted to those drums. And in our music and the way we put together, those drums are absolute under the spotlight from everybody in the band. So anyway, we managed to get that together. And you know, when we did our first few rehearsals and our first few gigs, it was just, yeah, this is really, really working. And it hasn't been an easy path at all. We've had quite a few bumps along the road, but here we are with the Promise and Terror album, and it's working out really well. You know, I can't believe it, really. It's a lot of hard work, but the reactions that we're having from the fans is just incredible.
Blaze, is there anything you'd like to say to end off the interview? Any last words you'd like to say to the fans or any of the fans in the U.S. To end off this interview today?
Well, we're trying to do, over the next couple of years, what we're trying to do with the Promise and Terror album and the next album is play as many small places as we possibly can at the lowest possible ticket price for fans in Europe and the USA and around the world. So as long as we can afford to get there, we don't care how small the gig is, we will go and play there if we can afford to get there. And I'd just like to say huge thank you to all the fans in the USA who have carried on believing in me, who've supported me, who've sent me such wonderful messages during my wife's illness and after she passed away, and have really believed in me and the project. So I really, really say a huge thank you to everyone who has carried on believing, and I really hope that I can make you proud with the Promise and Terror World Tour.